The Inner Sanctum Mysteries that ran from 1941 to 52 on the Blue Network, which became ABC in 1955, was a horror anthology series with a unique sound and a very popular host. For the first 4 years, Raymond greeted guests after an incredibly squeaky door slowly opened at the beginning of each show.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
His ghoulish puns were accentuated with the flourish of what sounded like a baseball pack organ. The stories themselves were directed by Hyman Brown, one of the most prolific and talented radio directors of all time. The stories took all sorts of twists and turns, and the body count often exceeded the number of commercials. As Brown himself described it, this is a quote, "We've killed our characters every way. We've knifed them, garroted them, burned them, poisoned them, bashed their heads, given them rare and fantastic diseases, pushed them out of windows and over cliffs," unquote. The mood was straight-faced and serious, except that Raymond would return during the breaks and loosen up the crowd a little with his morbid sense of humor. His laugh was particularly sinister, and the organ player, whose name was Lou White, knew just how to play off of it.
So that's why Steve Farrell wouldn't go back to his old profession of deep-sea diving. I should think it would lose some of its appeal if you expect to meet a dead man every time you go down.
The most common sound effect, and there were lots of them, was probably a shovel digging dirt for yet another late-night grave. A scene created with sound effects might go like this. Wind and owl hoots. Hurried footsteps on dirt. Clank of a handle of an iron door. The door opens. Footsteps resume on stone. The actor screams out in terror. Scenes like that really put listeners in the middle of the action and gave Inner Sanctum an especially vivid atmosphere that other horror shows lacked. Now I suggest you make some popcorn, find a comfortable location, dim the lights, put your feet up, unless you're driving, of course, and prepare to pass through our audio time portal to hear exactly what several million listeners heard at 7:30 p.m. on Monday evening of September 18th, 1950, when they opened the creaking door and stepped into the world of the Inner Sanctum to hear the story of Dead Man's Holiday.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends. This is your host of the Inner Sanctum, welcoming you to another half hour of mystery and terror, guaranteed to take 10 years off your life. Don't just stand there. Come on in. We've been fixing up the place, making it more homey. Yes, you see that beam over there with the rope hanging down? You just stand on the table, put your head through the noose, and, that's right. It's for the convenience of anyone who feels like hanging around after the broadcast.
I wish you wouldn't say things like that.
Oh, you're right, Mary. I'm a bad host. Here, I invite everybody to hang around, and there's only one rope. I guess we'll have to hang together instead of hanging separately. And now, friends, tell me, do you like holidays? Well, you won't after you hear tonight's story. It's called Dead Man's Holiday. And it's an original radio play by that scriptic mystic, Robert Sloan. Yes, and our star tonight is Myron McCormick, who plays the role of Eric. Not far from the waterfront, in a gloomy shack where death hovers near, a man stirs uneasily on a blood-stained cot. As he struggles for the last breaths of life, his tortured mind forces words to his lips.
They don't have to tell me. I know I can't live more than a little while longer. But I don't want to live. I want this nightmare to end. It should have ended long before that day I was hurt on the train. So clearly, sitting in the coach, looking out the window, and then suddenly the train shuddered to a violent stop. The joint twisted me clear out of my seat and threw me against the glass window, which broke as I hit it. For a moment, I was stunned. But in the back of my mind, I could hear the conductor quieting in the passage.
I tell you. Nothing serious has happened. We struck an empty car on the grade crossing. The engineer had a jam on the brakes. Is there anybody hurt? Anybody need a doctor around here?
Are you the all conductor right? Was coming down the aisle, questioning passengers, looking them over. My head was clear now. And immediately I thought of my wife in the seat next to mine. I turned to see if she'd been injured. But there in the seat which she had occupied was a man I'd never seen before. He spoke to me.
You all right?
Yes, I was shaken up a bit, but I'm all right now.
You've got a nasty cut on your lip.
I guess it was the glass. Will you excuse me, please?
What's the matter?
My wife. I'm looking for my wife. She was sitting right next to me. Eleanor, where are you?
What's wrong, sir?
My wife. She's gone, conductor. She's gone.
Right. No. Don't get excited.
She was sitting right next to me, right where this man is sitting now.
You must be mistaken.
What?
There wasn't any woman sitting next to you.
What are you trying to tell me? My wife was sitting in that seat.
All right, sir. She's on the train. We'll find her. Well, in the meantime, you'd better come with me and have that lip of yours attended.
Not until I find out what's happened.
Nothing's happened, mister. You're just a little dazed, that's all. Your wife isn't on this train.
That's a lie.
Why would I want to lie to you?
I don't know what your reason is, but you're trying to hide something from me.
I'm willing to swear you boarded this train alone.
How do you know that?
Because I've been sitting next to you ever since you got on.
I was taken to a hospital and given an anesthetic. When I came to, the doctor was standing over me. He said I was well enough to get dressed and leave, but when I mentioned the disappearance of my wife, he acted strange.
You've had a severe shock, Mr. Keating, and sometimes an accident like this has a way of playing tricks on the mind.
You don't believe that my wife was on that train?
I don't see how she could have been. Any number of the passengers were questioned. They all told the same story. You got on the train alone.
So you're in on it, too.
I beg your pardon?
You and the railroad and the man who was sitting next to me, you're all in on it. What are you trying to do to me?
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't you? Are you sure this isn't some kind of a plot to try and drive me out of my mind?
I think you need a rest, Mr. Keating. Just look at yourself in the mirror there. You see how drawn you are?
I'm all right. Good heavens. Doctor.
What's the matter?
My face. What have you done to me? What's happened to my face?
Why, nothing. I had to put a few stitches in your lip,
but not my lip. It's my whole face. Say, you've done something to it. It's different.
Mr. Keating.
It is, I tell you. You've changed my face. The next morning, I went straight to my house on Pine Street. I had no key, so I rang the bell, hoping against hope my wife would be there to answer it. But when the door opened, I was face to face with a gaunt,
middle-aged woman I'd never seen before.
Yes?
Who are you?
I beg your pardon.
Come on, answer me. Who are you?
Well, I'm the housekeeper.
Don't lie to me. We don't have a housekeeper. What are you doing here?
I don't see why I should answer your questions.
You'd better answer them. I'm Mr. Keating.
Who?
Mr. Keating, I live here. Where's Mrs. Keating? What have you done with her?
You must have the wrong address.
What do you mean?
Nobody by the name of Keating lives here.
What?
I work for Mr. and Mrs. Drury. Don't you see the nameplate on the door?
Yes, I see it. When did you put it there? Last night?
You've got the wrong address, Mr.
Oh, I have I? You see that picture over there? The one on the hall table?
Yes.
That's a picture of my wife.
I beg your pardon, sir, but that's the picture of Mrs. Drury.
Drury. Drury. I didn't know anybody by the name of Drury. I couldn't imagine why he or anybody else would go to so much trouble to keep me from my wife. I walked down to the corner drugstore to phone the police. But just as I got there, a car drove up and stopped. In it was the man who sat next to me on the train. I hurried over to speak to him. You remember me?
Why, yes, of course. Did you find your wife?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Can I be of any assistance to you? I work for the railroad, you know.
Yes, I had a feeling you did. What's your name?
Drury.
Drury? You live in the white house around the corner? The one on Pine Street?
That's right. How did you know?
I was just over there. I thought it belonged to a man named Keating.
Well, it did originally. You knew him?
Knew him?
Yes.
Why do you speak in the past tense? You sound as if the man were dead.
Well, didn't you know? He is dead.
You can't imagine what it was like to have him tell me that Eric Keating was dead. I was Eric Keating. I hurried away from him and kept walking toward the center of town. But it wasn't long before I realized that I was being followed by a man in a gray hat. I waited until he caught up with me. Then, as he started to pass, I stopped him purposely to get a good look at his face. Excuse me.
Yes?
Can I trouble you for a match?
Certainly.
Thanks.
Adventure.
Wait a minute. Why are you following me?
Who says I am?
It's pretty obvious. Now, you'd better tell me what your game is, or I'll call a cop.
That wouldn't do much good, mister. I'm on the force.
What?
Staying close. Thomas is the name.
Why? I don't understand. Why are you watching me?
That's my business, watching people. Your face looks kind of familiar to me. What's your name?
Eric Keating.
Say again, mister. You better tell me the truth this time.
I am telling you the truth. Why don't you believe me?
Because I happen to know where Eric Keating is right now. I saw his grave just the other day.
His grave?
Yes. He's buried in the same cemetery as my sister. Been buried for 6 years.
I had a feeling that Connors was lying. When he let me go a moment later, without proving my identity, I could have sworn he wasn't a detective. But I had to make sure. I had to catch him in a lie. I took a bus out to the cemetery. It was dark by the time I got there. But I had a flashlight, and with it, I saw the very thing I hoped I wouldn't find. A tombstone with my name on it. The shock was like a blinding light in the darkness, and for a moment I lost my senses. Insanely, I dug into the earth with a piece of sharp stone, determined to see the empty coffin or the bones of the man who had been buried in my place.
What are you doing, mister?
Connors.
You better come with me, mister.
Why? What's wrong? What have I done?
Killed a man, maybe?
What?
Yeah. Look at this police secretary.
Wanted. For murder.
That's right. The picture underneath those words is yours or your twin brother's.
No, I'm not this man. I may look like his picture, but I'm not the man.
Your fingerprints are said last. We've got his in the circular. Now we've got to get yours. Any objections?
Yeah. I won't go with him.
Don't you... Hold on.
Now, let's see. When we left him, he was telling us how a detective named Connors was about to arrest him for murder. Eric resisted, and they struggled at the cemetery. Connors fired a shot.
A bullet went through my left arm before I could reach Connors with the stone I had in my hand. I pounded it against his temple, and he dropped to the ground, unconscious. Then I ran as fast as I could, holding one arm with the other, losing blood all the time. Somehow, I got away. I was exhausted by the time I staggered into the doctor's.
Well, I guess you'll be all right now, Mr. Keating.
Thank you, Doctor.
Tell me, how did you happen to get this wound?
I was carrying a jar, and I fell.
Oh, you'd better not lie to me, Mr. Keating. The bullet was still in your arm. Who shot you?
I don't know his name.
Well, it would help a great deal if you did. I have to report this, you know. So you'd better tell me the truth.
I will in a moment, Doctor, but... First, I'd like to ask you a favor.
What is it?
Do you know anything about fingerprints?
No, not a great deal.
Well, you must know something. Here, take a look at the ones on the circular.
Mm-hmm. Why is the circular torn in half?
Never mind about that. Just look at the fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look at the ones on my hand.
Yeah.
Would you say they belong to the same man?
Unquestionably. Of course, I'm not an expert.
No, neither am I. But I can see that those are my fingerprints, all right. Somebody's done a perfect job of framing me. Either that, or I'm a murderer.
Mr. Keating, suppose I just report my work to the police and let it go at that.
I can't let it go at that. Don't you understand? I've been framed every possible way. And if I let it go, I'll be sent to the chair.
No, no, not if you're innocent.
I can't take the chance.
Well, I'm very much afraid you'll have to.
I reached for the paperweight on his desk. I crept a little closer. And then...
Keating, put that down!
You fool! I struck him hard on the side of the head. His body dropped to the floor and I bent over him. My heart was pounding against my chest. Something in the back of my mind kept driving me on. A voice kept saying, kill him! You're a murderer, kill him! I don't know why, but I struck him again. And again. And again. Until his lifeless body choked out its last breath. And then I knew I was a murderer. I hurried away in the darkness, took a bus to a neighboring town. I hired a room in a boarding house. I stayed there 3 days, hiding, not going out on the street. Then, on the fourth day, the landlady paid me a visit.
You'll have to get out of here. I can't take a chance of having you around anymore, killing that doctor. Weren't you in enough trouble already?
Shut up. I got a thing.
You've got to get out of here. They'll be searching this place before you know it.
Why?
Because you were here before. I never should have let you come back.
Come back?
Now get your coat and beat it.
Where'll I go?
Take it easy. I never let anybody down yet. Here, this is the address of a shack I own over near the waterfront. You can hide out there for a while.
Any food in that shack?
Never mind about that. I'll get in touch with Ruth and tell her where you are.
Ruth?
Yes, go on now. Get out of here before it's too late.
I waited in the shack for 2 days before this girl, Ruth, showed up. When she did get there, the first thing she said was...
Gosh, you look terrible.
Yeah, I know. I've been through a lot.
Well, start working on these groceries. You must be starved.
Yeah, thanks, I am.
I never thought I'd see you again.
Huh?
Why'd you do it?
I couldn't help myself. He was going to turn me over to the police.
I don't mean the doctor, I mean Richie.
Who?
Richie. What are you looking at me like that for?
I'm just trying to think.
You should have done some thinking before you buried his body where you did. They found it the next day.
Stop it, will you? I'm going out of my mind.
What's the matter?
Richie, Rules, Glory, the landlady. When is it going to stop?
Hey, take it easy.
I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here right now.
Don't be crazy. You'll get caught.
I don't care. Have you got a car?
Yeah, but...
Come on.
Let go of me. Let go. You hurt me.
Come on.
Where do you want to go?
Back to my house. I've got to find my wife. In the dark, we drove to my house on Iron Street. Ruth waited for me in the car as I sneaked into the garage and came up through the cellar entrance. The house was dark, except for a light in the study. My wife was sitting there, alone, reading a book. I tried not to frighten her. Eleanor? Eleanor?
That you, George?
No, dear. It's Eric.
Oh, good heavens. Who are you? What are you doing here?
Don't you recognize me, Eleanor?
No. No, get out of the house. Get out of the house, please.
Darling, I've got to make you understand. I'm your husband, Eric.
You're insane. Eric is dead.
No. You mustn't believe what they've been telling you. It's all part of a scheme I can't understand, but they're against us, Eleanor. They're trying to keep us apart.
Eric is dead.
Don't say that, darling.
He died 6 years ago.
And you're in on it, too. You want it this way.
What do you mean?
You and Drury want to be together. That's why you framed me.
George Drury is my husband.
Is he?
Yes, we've been married for 3 years.
You can't get away with this, Eleanor. I won't let you have it.
Oh, yes.
I tied her to a chair and gagged her so she couldn't scream or call the police. Then I left the house and got back into the car with Ruth. We waited there about 10 minutes. And then I saw the man I'd been waiting for. George Drury. He was walking down the far side of the street on the sidewalk. And I knew he'd have to cross over to get to the house. So I started the car.
What are you doing?
Getting ready. He's got to cross the street. He's got to.
What are you going to do?
Run him over.
No.
Let go of me, you fool. I'm crossing. Pick up the body. Stay where you are. I'll be back in a second. The three of us had a long ride that night. Ruth, George Drury's body, and myself. Automatically, I seemed to know where I was heading. Even though I had no destination in my mind, I made one turn after another, unconsciously almost, until at last I came to a dark stretch of road along a railroad track. I stopped the car and got out.
What do you think you're doing?
Don't ask any questions. I'm burying the body here.
Are you crazy?
Why?
Does this place look familiar to you?
Yes, I think it does. Can't remember why.
You lost your mind completely.
Will you stop talking like that and tell me what's wrong with this place? Why can't I bury the body here?
Because it's the same place you buried Richie.
Richie. Who is Richie? Why am I wanted for his murder?
You're wanted because you killed him in cold blood just the way you killed Drury. Only Richie was your partner. You pulled all your jobs together.
It couldn't have been me, Ruth. Not me. I didn't know Richie. I'm Eric Keating.
Is that your real name? You never told me the real one.
All right, but I... What's that?
The police.
Quick, we've got to get out of here. We left Drury's body near the railroad track and drove back to the hideout on the waterfront, where Ruth had met me earlier in the evening. There, I began to sew the threads of a horrible story which had in my life for the past 6 years.
The first time I saw you was about 5 years ago.
And I looked as I look now?
Yeah, more or less. You just had a plastic surgery job done. You told me it was because your face was burned, only I didn't believe you.
Yes, that was true. My face was burned badly.
How?
Yes, I'm beginning to remember. A railroad accident just about 6 years ago. The car I was in caught fire. I struck my head trying to climb out of a window.
You mean you lost your memory from that blow?
I must have. I must have wandered away from the scene of the wreck, not knowing who I was.
And you began a new life with people like Richie, huh?
Yes. I began to steal.
But your wife and the railroad company give you up as dead.
I can understand that. There were charred bodies in that wreck, charred beyond recognition. When I didn't show up, they must have listed me as one of them and buried another man's remains in my place. I wish it had been me.
Oh, Eric, that's awful. All the while you were suffering from amnesia, your wife thought you were dead.
And I didn't believe her when she said she'd married this fellow Drury.
Oh.
Ah. Funny how I sat next to him on the train that day. The jolt sent my mind back 6 years. And I thought I was Eric Keating. Coming home from a trip. With my wife. Who's there?
Come on, put your hands up, Keating.
The police.
They got this face around it.
You better do what he says, Eric.
What for? Why prolong the agony any more than I have to?
Eric,
don't call me Eric. Eric Keating is dead. Now let this other man die the way he should have died.
Eric, don't be a fool. You can't get out that window. The cops got it covered.
I know it, Ruth. I know it. It's all right. I wanted it just this way.
Finally got him. And this time they'll give him a grave he can call his own. I just hope he stays put this time instead of wandering as a ghost. A guy like that might not remember where he was buried.
I'm glad he's finally at rest now.
Oh, don't be so sure, Mary. That guy needs a tag on him. Time now to button up my shroud and start combing the catacombs. If you insist on a moral for tonight's story, try this. The evil that men do doesn't always live after them. Sometimes it catches up with them. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Lay That Pistol Down by Richard Powell. Next week's story is a real chiller diller. It's about a man who owes a debt to society, and he tries to pay it in blood, only to discover that in so doing, he had to pay a stiff price. Well, now it's time to close the squeaking door. So, good night. Pleasant dreams.
Remember to tune in next Tuesday night for another Inner Sanctum mystery.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.